20 years ago, my life revolved around billable hours and people and kind of all the stuff you mentioned at the beginning of the show. But now our whole world is around changing the course of people's lives.
ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado is a show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. Welcome, I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and subscriber info is available at ProCo360.com. Again, that's ProCo360.com. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Heather Terenzio, CEO and co-founder of Tectonic Group, a software services company building web-based and mobile products for startups and the Fortune 500. Heather is also the founder of Tectonic Academy, which trains people with diverse backgrounds how to code using unique Department of Labor-approved apprenticeship program. The apprenticeship program has been featured in the New York Times, Forbes, and Popular Mechanics. Heather, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, and before we go, I want to make sure that I thank our great sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. And MicroStar Keg Logistics, these guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. Okay, Heather Terenzio of Tectonic Group and Tectonic Academy, you ready to go?
I am.
Good. Well, I gave kind of a quick overview, and I went back and forth about, you know, whether it makes sense to talk about Tectonic Group first or Academy, but I've chosen to start with the group because I used to own and run a services-based company. And like lots of other entrepreneurs, you know, we start these project-based services companies. And I guess you exist because your clients don't want to staff up to do everything that you can do for them as they need you. And of course, perfectly, you have all the right people and staff so that you can aggregate them, right, and have the perfect balance. Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. So we have clients with, you know, in financial services, real estate, all over, and their core competencies are working on financial services and real estate, not in software development. And so we come in and build the software for them so they can focus on what they do best.
So, and having run a company kind of like that myself, I found it to be really a challenge to manage staffing levels. How do you do that?
There's an art and a science to that. And it's honestly an ongoing discussion that we have almost every day because it's feast or famine all the time, right? And you're managing hours and resources, and your inventory are your hours and your people.
Yeah.
And so it's a constant shell game, chessboard,
it
you
is.
Name it.
Do you have to balance it? Do you balance it with freelance support?
Not necessarily. We do mostly ad hoc development and then project-based development as well.
Well, what's the difference?
Sometimes clients just tap into our resource pool whenever they need us. And then other times we have ongoing projects that have sometimes been going on for years.
Right. So you're working with the same clients with the same team for years?
Yes.
So why haven't they just hired their own people to do this?
Again, it's not what they do well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they want to focus in on what their core competency is. They don't want to be software development shops.
So some of you, so you're not working with freelancers, but in your background, you did work with offshore companies, right?
I did.
So tell us about that experience. I've had some of that myself, and it's an interesting world.
Yeah, when I started this company 17 years ago, we started with an offshore team in Eastern Europe, and it was okay. You know, I had to go back and forth a couple times a year, and they came here a couple times a year, and we still found that it's really difficult to get across exactly what it is you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And you assume year after year after year that it's going to get better and better and better, and we found years into it that we were still facing the same kinds of struggles. And so we were actually getting to a point where we were having to describe every single little task that we needed done to such a degree that we could have had somebody here locally that was a junior or maybe mid-level person that could have done it just as well, faster, and better.
But it's sort of this attractive notion of getting great work cheap overnight kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How close is that to being true or not true anymore?
You know, it's always a challenge. And hey, I was out there selling offshore services for a long, long time. And you know, we kind of saw how the sausage was made in our company, and we were trying to shield our customers from the realities of working with an offshore team. And it, you know, if it takes 2-3 times to get something right, the cost advantage goes away.
I found in my experience with offshoring some coding and some production work and such that the communications, even though it was English to English, the communications, it was like you're hearing one thing and yet you're receiving a whole different message, or the intended message wasn't what you expected at all.
Yeah, and a lot of that is just cultural differences. Like if you say, I need a brown house to somebody here in the States, it means one thing. If you say it to somebody in Eastern Europe or India, it means a whole different thing altogether.
Well, I found my experience was that they would tell you, yes, I understand, yes, I got it, and then they would do something completely different. And it was so frustrating. Like, did I not say what I wanted? But there's a reluctance to say, I don't understand.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from a good place, from the offshore team standpoint. They just want to please. They want to do a really great job for you, and they don't want to deliver bad news.
Yeah.
So, you know, it comes from a good place on their side, but it's also really problematic for us here just trying to get work done and communicate to our clients that something is done or almost done.
So what are the challenges now then? You've got it sounds like a really solid team. You put them together. It's a reliable team that's most of them work together with you for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a great team.
So that strikes me too, as when you say I have a great team, why isn't somebody just trying to steal them every day, or are they? Because that's a tough, there's like a zero-sum game when it comes to talent now.
There is. It's super competitive out there. But because we've created this apprenticeship program, we've actually experienced a degree of loyalty and dedication that I've never seen before in this industry.
Well, when you mentioned the apprenticeship program, are you switching gears yet? I'm not quite ready to switch gears to the academy. Or is this internal?
This is internal. Actually, both entities are very intertwined. Mm-hmm. So the work from Tectonic Group also feeds into the apprenticeship program, which is Tectonic Academy, and kind of vice versa. So you'll find I'll keep weaving them together throughout this.
All right. So tell us about some of that. So we have a better sense of exactly what you do. Can you give me an example? Give us an example of a specific project, a problem that you've solved with your team.
Sure. One of our largest, longest-term clients is, have you seen those billboards around town for We Buy Ugly Homes?
Yeah.
They're one of our largest clients. They're actually based out of Dallas, but we've been working with them for about 5 years now, just building all their back-end systems for their franchisees and their vendor network. So it's all these online tools that actually has helped them to grow. They've grown from 200 franchisees to 2,000.
Well, and on the back of your infrastructure, your IT infrastructure that you've created for them.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. Now, when you do that, do you ever create products then that become tempting for you to sell separately from customer development?
We've gone down that road a few times, but it's a very different model from
it's
the services.
It's way different.
Model.
You have to become a marketer.
Exactly.
Instead of,
you have to go out and sell that. Yeah. You have to maintain a team. You have to do maintenance. It's a whole other thing. And so we're more here to enable our clients to actually have their products and go out and do that kind of stuff.
God, is there anything somebody should be doing in-house? You know, if it's not an IT company, but you think, yeah, they should be. I think it's become proven that doing cybersecurity in-house, bad idea. Mm-hmm. A lot of network maintenance in-house, generally, bad idea. Are there things companies can and should be doing in-house?
The real core competencies of your business you can do in-house, but you know, these days we try and really tightly integrate with our clients such that we feel like an in-house team. Hmm. So if you're in a position that you know how to build software and you can do it well and properly and maintain the overhead that comes along with that, then do it in-house by all means. But if you're not a software company, you don't understand the software life cycle, then leave it to the experts who know how to build it.
And there must be, even in Colorado, 100 companies like yours?
Oh, probably 1,000.
1,000? So how do you have a specific niche or a particular way that you position yourself so that you're the right choice for certain customers and not for others?
Well, when we get into the apprenticeship program, that's actually set us quite a bit apart from all of our competitors, because we've actually become a talent generation company as well as a software development company as well.
Well, I think that is a good segue, because first I'll remind you that you're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is a show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I've been speaking with Heather Terenzio, co-founder and CEO of Tectonic Group and Tectonic Academy. So let's let's shift gears mm-hmm. then, because you've mentioned the apprenticeship mm-hmm. a couple of times, starting with Tectonic Group uh-huh. and then more sort of transitioning us into the academy. Can you help us understand what that's all about?
Sure. So Tectonic Group had been around for a while doing offshore software development. And as I mentioned, we were having to describe everything to a real detailed level. And we decided that there's actually people here in the U.S. who could do that work even at a junior mid-level, and if we gave them the right kind of training. And so right about the time we were kicking this around, we've all met people in this industry who are the best software developers you'd ever met, but didn't necessarily have a college degree, didn't go mm-hmm, through the mm-hmm. usual channels,
yeah.
or were self-taught and kind of stumbled into it. And we thought, we bet there's a lot of people out there who just need some kind of an on-ramp to a technology degree, but maybe didn't have the right kind of schooling or academics in a formal sense. So we were actually playing around with this idea for a while, and I was actually giving a talk at a vocational school up in Boulder, and we were talking about, careers in software development. And after this event, a young man who was working catering for this event came up to me afterwards, and he said, "Oh, I love your company. Tectonic Group sounds so cool. I'd love to work for someone like you, but I only have a GED. I never finished high school, but I've been teaching myself to code for 10 years,
wow.
and I promised if you hired me, you would never regret it." And so right there and then I said, let's see what you got. Let's give you a try. And so he wound up coming on board with us. And in a couple of months, we were just pleasantly surprised by his enthusiasm, his aptitude to acquire new skills. He actually walked into my office one day and he said, "Heather, I just wanted to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I am so grateful to be here."
Well, I think that's a heartwarming and motivating and inspiring story. That works when the person comes through.
Yes.
Is there any way to actually tell when somebody, the person who walks up to you, actually is going to be worth all the time and energy and money you put into training?
Yes. Well, since that young man came to work for us, we have actually went all in on this apprenticeship model. And we got approved by the Department of Labor. And along with that comes a whole set of guidelines for what we need to be teaching, but also we've actually gotten really good at the screening process. So this last class, we had 400 applications, of which we accepted 15 people, and we put them through a 5-week class, and of those 15, we accepted the top 5. So it's a very long vetting process to make sure that we get people who have a very high degree of success with us.
Sounds like a quickly sloping funnel to a very sharp point. Now, as you do that, let's think about some of the things. How would you vet out from 400 down to 30 or 15? What kinds of things do you look for when you do that?
We do in-person interviews. We do some paired programming with our current team. We have a few hoops that you have to jump through. And so we just want to see that you have the right kind of motivation, that you're willing to take the exams that we need you to take, that we have them take some online classes as well.
They have to actually put some work into it.
Yes, yes. I mean, we're looking for people who are really ambitious and have a real desire to get into this career field and that you're willing to work to get there.
So what's the difference between what you're doing and this whole rage of boot camps and this and that? And of course, you don't charge for this, right? This is something that
we actually pay people to be a member.
So if you can get down through the bottom of the funnel, you become an employee.
Yes. You get paid on day one, and you start working for us as an apprentice.
What about those 5 weeks that you're learning?
It's free to the student, and we get funding from the Workforce Centers of Colorado. So we work really closely with government, with nonprofits. Some nonprofits actually sponsor people through that program.
How does an entrepreneur feel good working with the government? That is such a very challenging thing, isn't it?
It is. But
did hire someone who subjects herself to pain?
Well, I've actually been really pleasantly surprised. I mean, Colorado's an amazing place. I don't know if this happens in other states, but our workforce centers are so motivated to do the right thing for their customers, who are people who are trying to figure out what the next steps are. And they've been our biggest supporter. And I was never a huge fan of government, but I've definitely been turned around past couple of years.
I think that's good to hear. It's good to know. And you've also brought some military veterans through the program, have you not?
Yes, quite a few, actually.
What's the proportion of that to non-vets, and what's been your experience?
Well, It's hard to say exactly, but we're about 75% women, minorities, and veterans. And that's actually another thing that sets us apart from the boot camps, in that to attend a boot camp, you need to be able to take 6 months off and pay sometimes $20,000, $30,000. And so that rules out a lot of veterans. It rules out a lot of minorities. It rules out people who need to have a job during that time. And so we've been able to become a really diverse company very quickly, whereas you know, a lot of other companies with a lot more budget than we do can't do the same thing.
Well, you're starting to sound like a philanthropic nonprofit.
I know. Isn't that funny? No, we are not. We are a for-profit company trying to do the right thing.
So does this make you more money ultimately?
You know, I think it does. I mean, here I am on this podcast, right? Yeah. We were in Popular Mechanics. We were in the front page of the New York Times. And the amount of publicity and recognition that we've got because of this program has been more than worth it. And companies like us, they make 30, 40% margins, but we're actually okay with 10, 20% margins and putting that money back into this apprenticeship program because the volume of work that we've been doing, the amount of lives that we've been able to touch has been amazing. And I've been doing this for 17 years, and this is the most fun I've had in a long, long time.
It sounds really gratifying. And, you know, the famous saying now, so famous by Simon Sinek, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it.
Exactly.
Are customers hiring you because they want to support your approach?
Yes, very much so.
But I mean, you still have to do the work.
Yeah. And so we're out there competing with, you know, much larger companies like us, with the 1,000 other companies that have the exact same business model on the Tectonic Group side. But the way we've changed our model a little bit is that we're working with larger companies like Zayo, like Arrow, like a Pivotal even, about they hire us for some software projects, and they can actually hire in those apprentices at the end of our engagement. So for them, it becomes a talent pipeline for diverse talent, and they also get the work done as well.
Well, that's all well and good for you, but then you got to fill that spot again.
Yeah.
I guess that's the whole perpetual motion piece of this.
That's the whole purpose of it, is that we're looking for apprentices, we're training them up, and we're helping them to move on to the next stages
all right,
in their career.
I'm starting to catch on with this thing, man. So a couple questions about that. Then, you know, plumbers, electricians, they're all seen as tradesmen.
Yep.
Are coders now becoming tradesmen?
I think tradeswomen? So. I mean, you don't need to take English and Shakespeare to be a really good software developer. You just need to be really good at software development. And we need people out there who can be good software developers. The unemployment rate right now is less than 2% for software developers.
Yeah.
And so we've had to get really creative about how we're finding and generating talent.
Is it scalable?
I think so. We've been approached by several other cities. Actually, we were just talking about Montrose the other day.
Boy, the Western Slope could really use this.
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be great. And think about it. We could create onshore software development facilities in smaller town USA.
You'd still have less expense. That's an interesting model.
Right. So somebody in Silicon Valley, if they can outsource to India, they can outsource to rural Colorado, or we're also talking to Santa Fe.
That's quite intriguing. If you forgot who I'm interviewing, I'm speaking, this is Dave Tabor, your host of Pro Business Colorado, and I'm speaking with Heather Terenzio, co-founder and CEO of Tectonic Group and Tectonic Academy. We've got a few minutes left, and one of the thoughts I had too is that it's one thing to be trained as an electrician or a plumber or some other trade, and you can do that until you retire. What happens to coders who start when they're 23 years old? And I mean, are you seeing some coming back who were trained maybe in the 80s, in their 50s and 60s, learning things like .NET and JavaScript or advanced WordPress, things like, are you seeing that?
We are seeing kind of late career folks come back around and want to learn the more modern technologies.
Is that much? Are you seeing much of that, or are these anecdotal?
A little bit. Not as much.
Not much.
We tend to, most of our apprentices tend to be in that 19 to 26 year old range.
I would think that would make sense. A couple of questions about how you manage this, the training and the investment in people. I mean, what does it cost you to put somebody through your apprenticeship program? Because I always, the skepticism, and I think, is that, are you ever going to get your money back?
Yeah, the model actually works out pretty well. And I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years, everybody's doing this. So we bring somebody on board, we pay them, but we get support from the workforce centers, from the state. We've actually gotten a grant from the state as well. But if I can bill that person even for 5 hours a week doing testing, doing kind of smaller tasks, then they actually start to get on the plus side for me pretty quickly, probably within 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
So I make probably a $20,000 investment in them, but within about 3 months, they actually start to get on the positive side.
So there's an ROI, even if they just do one significant project for you and then they go off to a client.
Yes.
And one of the best things, we see this in accounting firms, law firms, and others, when you lose somebody to one of your customers, then they become your big advocate forever, right?
Exactly.
And I would think they keep that connection going.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, we have an amazing amount of loyalty. I mean, the average lifespan of a software developer at a company is about 2 years. And we have people who just love what we're doing, love what we're about, and want to pay it forward as well and train up the new apprentices who are coming through.
And so they're staying longer because they're part of something that they
think is... Yeah, I mean, we've taken a chance on someone that no one's taken a chance on before.
So how much has your attitude changed? You mentioned you've been doing this. You're happier now than you were when you were doing other things. How much of your attitude is grounded in a level of maturity that you've gained and experience that you've gained through running this company? I mean, did you think this way 20 years ago?
No. You know, 20 years ago, my life revolved around billable hours and people and kind of all the stuff you mentioned at the beginning of the show. But now our whole world is around changing the course of people's lives. Mm-hmm. So we have people who were baristas and busboys and, you know, doing kind of real minimum wage type jobs who are now on this incredible pathway. And for me, it's just so gratifying to see people's lives changing. And it's, you know, that typical prima donna developer profile doesn't exist at our company. We have people who are humble and excited to be there and really eager to do the work and, you know, work harder than most people I've ever seen.
20 years ago, if you were running the very same company with a different mindset, because you wouldn't have become seasoned, mature, more altruistic, whatever the case, right? Would you have attracted the crazy hardcore programmers then, different from the kinds of people you're attracting now?
It's definitely, maturity does play into it because I have faith in the company and that it's growth and that we have a great client base. And so now I'm able to think more creatively around the other stuff I want to do. So I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek as well. And, you know, giving your employees purpose to come to work every day. And it's not just about a paycheck. It's not just about writing lines of code all day long. But especially for millennials, it means a lot these days to come to work and have this greater purpose around what we're doing and that we're changing the course of people's lives, you know, makes a big difference.
Well, you're doing good while you're at your business. Have you made some mistakes as you tried to be a good person, a humble leader? Have you made mistakes that now you've learned from?
Oh, I make mistakes every day.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a very trusting person, so that's a hurdle I always have to get over, is that I want people to work out. I want to see the best in people, but, you know, they have to want it as well. So I've actually had to get a lot more regimented about, you know, the people I bring on and the people who are part of what we're doing and that they have the right kind of vision and motivation behind them as well.
That makes sense. And we both, I guess, conversational point. We both mentioned Simon Sinek. We both, is there somebody else, some other book, some other author, something else that strikes you as sort of a bedrock belief that you like to deploy throughout your day and throughout your life?
You know, I read a ton, actually, and I always read nonfiction. So for some reason, the past probably 5 years, I don't read much fiction anymore at all, but I love biographies. I love hearing other people's stories. I just finished Ellen Pao's book. She was a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley, and I'm now reading Walter Isaacson's book about Leonardo da Vinci. But I just love hearing people's stories and the troubles that they went through and how they got beyond them, and I kind of take a little bit from each one of these, but I just love that personal story.
Very good. Well, thanks. Let's wrap up here. Thank you, Heather. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, I've been speaking with Heather Terenzio of Tectonic Group, a software services company building web-based and mobile products, and of Tectonic Academy, which trains people with diverse backgrounds how to code using a unique apprenticeship program. Heather, thanks again for joining me on ProCo 360.
Thank you so much, Dave.
This is Dave Tabor. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar, Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones and Keller. Thanks to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com. Go there to subscribe. Again, that's ProCo360.com. Thanks for listening.